Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
And good morning, everybody. Yes, Thursday is the day. That is correct. My last day of
your
work.
Your last day for a couple for a weeks. While.
Yeah, we're scheduled to be joined by the director of the MU Law School, Paul Charles Franklin, any second. But as I was thinking about this, I haven't talked to him since the election, really, right before the election.
I don't think I have either.
I'm going to ask him when he joins us. Like, does he just take a vacation after?
Probably.
Like,
he goes fishing.
I don't know what his pastimes are, his fun stuff, but I mean, it's super busy and then nothing for a while.
Well, now we got a new poll out.
Yeah, and this one's sort of really relevant to the times. You and I did a podcast about it that'll air in a couple, it'll be released in a couple of weeks on sort of this political violence that's shaping us, the anger, and, you know, this administration and the reaction of this administration, just driving the sort of the fear in some cases and some people, anger in others, and this conflict that we always talk about. And MU did MU Law School did polling directly on that, looking at political conflict and political violence. And I guess not surprising, the numbers sort of shake out somewhat bipartisan, on partisan
lines.
Well,
it's that there's a majority of people who think that political violence is a problem. But depending on if you're asking a Republican or if you're asking a Democrat, a self-identified Republican or Democrat, they think, not shockingly, the right-wing extremist violence is the problem versus left-wing extremist violence is the problem, and not a lot of self-reflection. But there are a lot of people who think, like independents, who is like, it's all bad. Which is the right take to have.
Yeah, so I'm looking at some of the numbers before Charles Franklin joins us. If you add up the the violence against political leaders, big problem, or a moderately big problem, or small problem, it's like 90%. So, I mean, I think Americans most Americans are on the right side of this thing. But, I mean, when you talk about, I think you asked me either on the show or the podcast, have you ever seen it this bad? And
well, I said, no, sure. What I said, I was like, have we always been this violent and there's just more
coverage
of it now. It's the same thing, you know, when we talk about police brutality and the conversation around, well, this has always happened. We just have cell phones now. And so more people are aware of it because you can capture it. Anyone has a camera on their phone to be able to film stuff that's happening. And so between the access of citizen journalists who capture things on their phone and that can go viral, and just the endless amounts of content that can be created both by traditional outlets and anyone with a camera, is there just more access to understanding how much is happening all the time, but we're not necessarily becoming more violent? Because I think I saw on U.S. News that we're on track to have one of the lowest homicide years in, like, ever.
Yeah.
As a country. And so, in general, we are getting less violent as a human race than we have been in the past over time.
Yeah.
But does it feel scarier right now because of how much we can consume what's happening, even if it's not happening in our backyard?
Yeah, that's sort of one of those statistics that's bad. I mean, less bad, but still bad. You know, we're still shooting each other up.
I mean, you'd think that at some point we could evolve past some of our worst lizard brain instincts, but
you would think, but I mean, so much of that is just built into our DNA, I guess, and our genes and our proteins and all that stuff. The human genome is
built complex
and conflicted, right? Conflict is a big, started early on and it still thrives today. We'll do this. We'll take an early break. We'll see if we can reconnect with Charles Franklin, Jeremy Janine, who joins us every Thursday for the second hour. Lots of Milwaukee stories to talk about, including budget stuff. So we'll get to all of that after this on Point Taken on WTMJ. All right. Sometimes I make mistakes, and we were supposed to call Charles Franklin, and now Charles Franklin, the director of the MU Law School polls. I apologize profusely, Charles.
No problem at all. I'm glad we were able to get together today.
So Kristen and I were joking around before we brought you on that do you take a vacation after like all the heavy lifting of all the polling in advance of the elections last year?
Well, in the odd numbered years, I tend to go away for a week or 10 days.
There you go.
I've been to a monastery. I've been to a cabin in the Dells. And last year, I went to Milwaukee.
Oh, so now you did not isolate yourself last year.
Oh, I was isolated.
I love it.
I laid up. I read books. I looked out on the lake. I had a great time, mostly by myself.
Oh, that's lovely. I remember talking to you about that, as far as like the monastery thing, and the they're like, I just don't want to talk to anyone for a handful of days.
Exactly. It is refreshing. Not that I don't like talking to folks. I like talking to y'all. I like talking to the audience. But, you know, so much of a good thing in an election year especially, it's nice to get away a little bit.
All right. So we have a momentary pause in the elections, although it's going to ramp up big time, especially in Wisconsin next year with the governor and the Supreme Court race. So you did some recent polling that you released. And looking at in political conflict, political violence, and as well as some other things. But let's focus on that one for a bit. What were the takeaways from your polling on how your respondents feel about that?
I think the big takeaway would be people think political violence threats against political leaders is a pretty big problem. 38% say very big, and another 38% say moderately big. So that's three quarters that think it's a problem. We also think violence is unacceptable, never justified. Only 89% say it's never justified. Only 11% say it's sometimes justified. But then we get to the finger pointing, and they are both sides see the other side as the problem and don't see any problems with their side. And I think that is really the commentary on how we're polarized about this, even when we agree it's a problem, even when we agree it's bad. But it's not us that's doing it. It's those guys on the other side that are doing it.
So I don't know if you do this or not. So you've gathered that those opinions, and you just sort of nailed it right at the end there that, okay, so what do we do about it? Do you ever like follow up and say, what do people think the possible solutions would be?
We don't ask that. That might not be a bad thing for us to ask. We did ask, do you think there's an off-ramp that the country could take that would lower political violence or threats of violence? Or do you think we're so divided that violence is just going to increase? Only 31% thought there's an off-ramp we could take. 69% think we're going to see escalation. And so that's a pretty pessimistic outcome of this survey.
It's a very have you polled on these questions before?
We have not asked these before. These were added after the killing of Charlie Kirk, and so we haven't had an inventory of them before. There was one finding that another survey firm, YouGov, has, and that is, how big of a problem is political violence? In our poll, as well as in theirs, more Republicans after the Kirk shooting say it's a big problem, a very big problem, 50%. Only 30% of Democrats say that. But if we go back to the shooting of the Democratic legislators in Minnesota, those numbers were reversed with Democrats saying it's more important, Republicans less important. After President Trump was shot, Republicans more important, Democrats less important. After Nancy Pelosi's husband was assaulted and beaten with a hammer, Democrats more important, Republicans less important. So I think there's a pretty clear pattern here. When it's our guy that's the target, we're much more concerned than when it's the other guy that's the target. That's a depressing finding as well, not a surprising one.
What was the outcome of people who didn't necessarily identify as either party and their feelings both about violence and about who's perpetrating it more?
Yeah, the independents are a little less concerned about it than either Democrats or Republicans.
Oh, that's
27% say it's a very big problem. Yeah, that's pretty close to the Democrats, 30%, but still well below where Republicans are. But on the we asked which side is more responsible for violence. 27% said left wing, 22 said right wing, and 51%, a majority, said both are equally to blame. But this is where 57% of Republicans said it's the left. Only 3% of Republicans said it's the right. Democrats flip that. 50% say it's the right, 4% say it's the left. But to answer your question, independents, 87% say it's both sides.
You know what?
So I guess you need an impartial referee here to speak out on this.
Well, I'm not impartial. I'm not impartial, but I agree with the independence, if that matters to anybody. Charles Franklin joining us, director of the Marquette University Law School poll. This one is not surprising, and it's sort of, I think it's typical, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong. A two-term president, second term, overall job performance numbers, do they typically trend down? And I think that's what the Donald Trump's numbers are showing as well, Charles.
Yeah, they've been slipping slowly over his 6 months plus in office. He's at 43 approved, 57 disapproved now. It was 48-52 back in late January, right after he was sworn in. So that's a 5-point decline. It's not a tremendous decline, but it's been steady from poll to poll to poll. We've seen a decline of about a point in each poll that we've done compared to the previous one. No surprise there's a huge partisan split on this. 81% of Republicans approve, 27 independent, 8 of Dems. Republicans are down 8 points, though, from January when they were at 89% approve. And that means we've gone from about 11% of disapproving Republicans up to about 19% of Republicans disapproving now. It hasn't by any means cratered the president's approval rating, but given how negative independents and especially Democrats are, keeping his approval rating up with Republicans is politically a very important thing. And we're seeing some slippage on that.
Hmm. And then you also polled on what issues people are caring about the most. And so what tops that list?
It is inflation, inflation, inflation. Mm. We've seen this in every poll we've done this year. 40% say inflation's the most important. 19% say the economy's most important. And then it drops off to 10% on immigration and 9% on Medicare and Social Security. 7% on health care and everything else is below 5%. But that's been incredibly consistent. And people are very pessimistic about inflation. 67% think inflation will go up over the next 12 months. That's up a little bit from May when it was 63% thinking it would go up. And people see their price of groceries going up 74%. Say their grocery prices are up over the last 6 months. 16% think they've held steady and only 9% think that grocery prices have gone down. Finally, this is also a place where President Trump polls rather poorly. It's his second lowest approval rating. Just 29% approve of how he's handling inflation. 71% disapprove. And on that, 60% think his policies will increase inflation. Just 15% think they'll decrease inflation. And finally, that's a big change from December, right after he was elected, when only 45% thought he would drive up prices and 41% thought he'd bring them down. So going from 41% thinking he'll lower inflation to just 15% thinking that now, you can understand why his overall approval on inflation is as low as it is.
Charles, only got about 45 seconds left, but I wanted to get this in because you released some survey numbers today on the Supreme Court. Interesting takeaway that I read, that 75% of each side says the president must obey Supreme Court orders. Is that your takeaway?
Yes, and this is a case of real unanimity, and it stayed this way for a long time. We're seeing over 70% saying the president must obey the Supreme Court. Overall, it's 84-16 must obey for all people.
All right. Charles Franklin, get your rest this year because it's going to be really busy next year.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Thanks for joining us as always.
Always fun, Charles.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a quick break here on Point Taken, 620 WTMJ. Thanks to Charles Franklin, director of the MU Law School poll, Marquette University, the great Marquette University. I haven't talked to him in a long time, so it was great to hear his voice. And as I said, it is going to be busy as you know what next year because we have the governor's race, we've got the Supreme Court
race. Well, here's
race.
The thing. So we finally have a conservative candidate for the Supreme Court race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who's going to join us?
Maria Lazar.
In the week of the 20th.
When you're back.
Yeah.
Do you... My instinct right now is telling me that it's not going to be as intense as the last two have been.
Why do you feel that way?
I feel like there's a...
It's not a court decider. That's one thing.
It's not a court decider. And I think there's something... So when you were out on Monday, Dan Bice was here and Mary Spicuzza. And there was something deflating, I feel like, in the way that Rebecca Bradley announced why she wasn't running again. She all but said, like, I don't have faith in the GOP infrastructure in Wisconsin to get this done. And I don't want to be on a minority court anyways. And so I think there's just something like to capture some energy going into this race. I think there's a lot of work to do on the conservative side.
Oh, yeah. There's conservatives are worried about this race.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because this sort of cements the makeup of the court for a long time, well out into the future. So I'm going to do something in the next half hour. We're going to do something. I'm going to explode all of the nonsense that's going around about the, you know, this shutdown and why it's happening in healthcare. There's a lot going on here, but we'll get to the latest now from ABC first. Thanks for tuning in on this Thursday. And I always want to remind people, because we do a lot here at WTMJ, especially on Point Take, and there's always ways you can find our content if you miss something, if you're going in shopping and you heard part of a conversation.
Want to listen to us at 2x speed and have Steve sound like a little mouse?
Right.
Chipmunk?
Or you.
But probably more likely me, but.
It's all available at WTMJ.com or wherever you get your podcast. Point Taken is the name of the show. And then our podcast, You Need to Listen, which
we have a new one out today.
Yeah. And listen to the title of this. Are we in the era of stupidity? And I'll tell you right now, my answer is yes. You sort of waffled on it a little bit. Maybe not waffle is not the right word, but you were not as convinced as I was.
Well, no, I also, because we get into... You have more of a theory that you think AI is going to get us out of it, and I think it's only going to make it worse.
There's a potential. I'm not saying it's absolutely going to happen. I'm saying there's a potential that it could help.
I feel like that the potential is only there if it's altruistic people who are managing and developing it, which I don't think is the case right now.
Yeah, it's not the case at all. And that is an important clarification and point there. And if you use the social media example, there's no evidence that that's going to happen for AI either. So, I mean, because that's been a...
There's now a new... OpenAI has basically their own TikTok.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
As far as... And it's all just AI videos.
Yeah.
I don't know who... I just reject the idea. And you can tell me if you think... And then we'll get to this shutdown. But... I don't think people just want to watch fake people.
God, I hope not.
Right? As far as the desire to go download something where everything that's going to pop up is AI. And then we're going to get to a place where we don't know what is AI or what is real. Mm-hmm. And it's a further degradation from where I felt why I don't like Twitter anymore. Because on Twitter, it's like with now that anyone can pay for a blue check mark. When you see someone say something and you have to the work to go figure out who that person is and the context of which what they're saying is in, it just feels like this is too much work to try to get information and use any media literacy that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go read an article. And the same thing as far as trying to go through social media and connect on a human level with someone who is being vulnerable or telling a joke. And you're like, oh, well, this is just a fake person. I don't know. I think it's going to change social media in general, and people again. My theory is that we're going to revert back into wanting human interaction in real life.
And that I agree with you. Yes. Listen. You can just text the word listen, LISTEN, to 855-616-1620. You'll get the link to the latest edition of You Need to Listen, or just save it in your favorite podcast, and then it'll tell you when the new episode is up. We have another one every 2 weeks, and wherever you get your podcast.
And if you watch the video, then you can see. We have a look at one another that is typical.
It accurately expressed how we were feeling at the moment, because when you're doing a topic about how stupid everybody is, it's sometimes not the most exciting way to start a podcast. Anyway, so I want to sort of examine what I think illustrates, to use the word stupid, the stupidity of politics. So we are now in a government shutdown.
We are.
And I watched.
Do you know that if you call the White House line right now, it's Caroline Leavitt saying, you've reached the White House. We can't answer the phone right now because the Democrats have shut down the government.
Which actually may be illegal, and there's already some inquiries.
Some Hatch Act stuff.
Yeah, because they're not supposed to be doing that, especially on government property. Because anybody who's served or worked in local government or state government, you can't use the tools of the public to play politics.
And that's exactly what they're doing. So, matter of fact, it gets worse than that. If one of their employees goes on their computer, the screen will blame it on Democrats. Sort of a fascinating way to sort of spread the messaging, but that's what they're doing, which probably is illegal. Again, throwing everything back into the courts. So we'll see in 4 years when they've decided that issue, which is probably the way it's going to happen. So I spent way too much time yesterday. I sort of gotten out of that world, but I jumped back in.
Which world?
The world of TV commentary on politics.
Okay.
Broadcast,
cable news.
Cable news, broadcast networks. And I'm going to play for a clip a little bit from CNN's the show with Jake, The Lead with Jake Tapper, where he's talking to Hakeem Jeffries, which I think is going to, for me, sort of demonstrate what I'm talking about. So the big critical complaint is about health care, right? That's a big piece of this. Democrats, they say, are trying to protect Obamacare. Republicans, almost to the word, every appearance that I saw yesterday was more than a dozen on different shows, always say they want to give health care to illegals, the term they use, undocumented, the term a lot of people use. And that is like the back and forth. Lots of stuff they're talking about, but that's the back and forth. So let me play this clip. This is Hakeem Jeffries, minority leader in the House, talking to Jake Tapper on CNN about a really specific point about the BBB, the Big Beautiful Budget Bill, I added a B, and why this is so troubling and just illustrates the stupidity of politics. Listen carefully.
So let me ask you about a provision that the Republicans are talking about quite a bit. I know you want to talk about, and Democrats want to talk about, extending the Obamacare subsidies, which expire at the end of 2025. But they talk about the provisions, and it's right here, Subtitle E, and this has to do with the repeal of health care subtitle changes, and specifically what it is. How they characterize it is, you want to give health insurance to undocumented immigrants. I understand that's not really an accurate depiction, but what it does do is...
That's a lie.
It's a lie, but what you support does bring back funding for emergency Medicaid to hospitals, some of which does pay for undocumented immigrants and people who don't have health insurance. And also, there is this provision, and it's not about undocumented immigrants. It's about people with asylum seekers and people with temporary protected status, et cetera, but about their ability to get Medicaid. So they're non-citizens. They're not undocumented. They're not illegal. Why even include that in a bill, knowing that they're going to seize right upon that and use that to message?
So two things here. Yes, he is right, Jake Tapper. You gave the Republicans the information.
Butter.
Yeah, to blow you up.
But
here's the thing.
I
got to get through this. Okay. Otherwise, I'm gonna lose my freaking mind. This is the stupidity of politics. I didn't mean to yell at you there. This is why this is nuts. Any person of any status in our country, if they need medical attention, can go anywhere and get medical attention. That's guaranteed by the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, enacted in 1986. Doesn't matter if you're illegal, undocumented, whatever status you are, citizen, doesn't matter. That is a reality. But what is happening here is because of the stupidity of politics, we're letting these two sides do this with language that they know the other side is going to play into. And that's exactly what happened here. We're not getting an intelligent debate. This is nonsense. Nothing is going to change with a person's ability to go into a hospital and get treatment. Nothing. Regardless of what they do with this BBB, nothing will change.
Well, what could change is the hospitals don't get reimbursed. And so the hospitals are on the hook for paying for emergency services, which then makes the prices for everyone go up or makes more hospitals close.
But any doctor or nurse is never going to refuse treatment because they swore an oath that they would never do that. Ever. Ever. Ask a doctor or nurse. They'll tell you.
I've talked to some people who've been turned away if they don't have insurance.
This stuff is nuts to me. Not if they're critically hurt.
Not an emergency, but as far as like, we interviewed about the breast cancer.
But the act is called the Emergency Medical Treatment.
Yeah,
not healthcare for all. So this is, I wanted to play that clip because Tapper's exactly right. He found that point that Republicans have used to go after Democrats, and Democrats, they're not, they're their worst enemies as well because they certainly can't figure things out. But this is what we do. We've given each other, the two sides, this ability to just go back and forth. They're literally saying the exact words in every interview they do, whoever it is, Hakeem Jeffries or any other Democrat, Speaker Mike Johnson or any other Republican. They're saying the exact same words in every interview they do. So those are exactly talking points.
Yeah, it's message discipline.
Yeah. It's horrific. And we sit here and we take this. Meanwhile, anyone who needs a service, critical service, our military won't be paid. on the 15th if there's a shutdown. But we're forced to listen to nonsense on every media platform because we've allowed it to happen. I didn't mean to yell at you before.
That's fine. I love when you get fired up.
It just drives me nuts. And this, I want it because this is a classic example of what happens in politics. Oh, there's nothing in that bill. Well, actually, there is something in that bill. He cited the actual piece. You Democrats gave the Republicans all they needed to blow you up. And why? So why are you surprised it happened?
What was the what did Hakeem Jeffries say in response to that?
He said it was still a lie, basically.
Okay.
There's a lot more to that, and I encourage you to go find the lead with Jake Tapper. You can listen to the whole discussion. Look, I'm not someone who wants to see people turned away when they need health care. I'm somebody that wants the system to be fair. I think hospitals and healthcare providers have certainly messed their own bed in the way they do things, paying people who work in their offices hundreds of thousands of dollars and not paying nurses and doctors as much, probably nurses more than doctors, what they deserve for doing that work, making it so impossible for people to figure out their bill. And thankfully, there's starting to be some clarity on that, so you can actually know what you're paying for. And
well, that's the advice, right? It's like never accept the first bill that you get.
Oh, absolutely.
Ask for an itemized bill. Ask for if there's a cash discount. Like I have so many different checklists booked as far as whenever you get a big medical bill of all the different steps you can take to try to get it lower.
It's just I wanted to get my frustration out because after sitting there watching all that stuff, I'm like, I've learned nothing. You're just going after each other. You're actually not targeting anything in sort of improving our system of government, improving our quality of life. You're not doing anything.
So here's a question. What do you think should happen? Like, who do you blame right now?
I blame both sides.
But what's the solution? Where, how do they move forward? Because there's a side basically saying they have the power of they have all three branches, not three branches. They have both the House, the Senate, and the presidency. And so who is it beholden on to come up with a deal to get the 7 votes that they need in the Senate?
Someone other than Hakeem Jeffries and Speaker Mike Johnson or John Thune.
Chuck Schumer.
Someone other than them taking leadership. Because they're fools. All of those guys. Mike Johnson's the worst, but they're all fools. Because they allow this to happen. I wish I could have an easy answer to fix things, but there is no easy answer. They wanted to do this because they wanted to prance around on TV and make themselves look good with their fancy suits and their, you know, made up hair and their makeup.
Both sides?
Collective they, both sides. This is a both sides problem. And if you don't think it is, you're wrong. All of you who are listening, if you don't think it's a both sides problem, you're wrong. And I gave you evidence why that's the case because Tapper identified that little thing. It's all Republicans needed. Now they can go out and talk shows and radio shows and say that over and over again, tweet it out like Derek Van Orden did yesterday and every other Republican. It's just messy. It's not productive. It's not efficient. And that's the problem. That's why I wanted to point that out. We got to take a break. I'm getting yelled at by Jazz. All right.
Oh, we do have to take a break. Oh, man.
Sorry about that. Break. All right, let's shift the weed.
Smoke it. Let's smoke some weed. Let's calm down.
Smoke them if you got them, which a lot of my friends do. You know, they drive to Illinois and pick up their legal weed down there, but not legal up here. Hello. I have noticed this, though. I know I only got a couple minutes because I went way too long, and I apologize. I just was like, I was on that issue, and I thought about it last night, and I said, I got to get it all out of me. I did. So I forgot where I was going with that.
We're going to go with weed. So GOP lawmakers in Wisconsin.
So let's give some love to some GOP lawmakers. Senators Patrick Teston from Stevens Point, Mary Felskowski, who we've had on the show, right, I think?
Have we had her on the show?
You were gone, yeah.
Okay.
And
I'm going to have a lot of people while you're gone, yeah.
Yeah, well, then you can say it to me. Representative Patrick Snyder, I can say it to you. They, from Weston, they want now, apparently, to create a tightly regulated, I should say, medical marijuana industry in Wisconsin. So does that mean they want to allow medical use of marijuana?
Yes, but this is different than the bill that was introduced last year. Was it last year or 2 years ago? I think it was last year.
I think so.
That had the provision that it would be state-controlled dispensaries, which in the Senate, because it was introduced in the Assembly, and then it got to the Senate, and people didn't want state-controlled dispensaries.
That doesn't make any sense.
But this bill would still regulate from seed to sale, ensuring that the product quality is consistent for customers. And you would need a prescription. It'd be for chronic illnesses. Like, I think this sounds like a good bill 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? As far as we're testing it out of doing medical marijuana, and we want to be, you know, very regulated, very controlled. And when you think about the fact that something between, I think it's like 70% to 80% of the Wisconsin population lives within an hour drive of a state that sells recreational marijuana, and so the hoops that this would force people to jump through. Yes, it would be legal, but is it any easier than just going to Illinois and getting some stuff rather than having to go to your doctor and get the prescription and everything? So I think it's a little too little, too late.
It's 10 years late, as you said, but to Senators Patrick Tessin and Mary Felskowski and Patrick Snyder, good job. Convince your friends because they're frankly the problem. All right, I talk so much, we got to go to break now. News is next.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bryan.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour, Steve's last hour of radio for 2 weeks.
Yes. A lot of people out there cheering, I bet. Hey, yeah. Get him off the air.
A lot of people also figuring out what else they're going to listen to because they're big More Steve guys.
Hashtag More Steve.
Hashtag More Steve. But we'll fill your shoes while you're gone.
Yeah,
we'll
you got a lot of great guests coming up.
We do, indeed. Mm-hmm. All right, well, quickly, before we invite our friend Jeremy Janine on to talk all things Milwaukee, wanted to just quickly, acknowledge something so fun and cool and interesting that you and I got to do yesterday. So I had not heard of this before, but the International Visitor Leadership Program, which is part of the U.S. Department of State, and we had the opportunity to sit with 15 and 20 visitors, all of whom, there was one person from Haiti, and then the rest were all from different African nations, two from Zimbabwe, and then one Nigeria, Tanzania, Tunisia.
Tunisia was represented.
Kenya, Nigeria.
Mozambique.
I'm probably missing some other ones, too. And so we sat with them for an hour. You and I got to sit with them for an hour, and they were mostly asking us questions. But I'm kind of bummed we didn't get to ask them more questions.
Yeah. They were all brilliant. It's sort of an honor to be on this trip.
And because they ranged from journalists to communication specialists to new media and social media. And I feel like the opportunity to learn more from them as far as how they are, some of the same problems we're dealing with here when it comes to AI, social media, journalism, living on with like a free press, and how that translates into the struggles that their countries are having, because it obviously exists. And I think sometimes I said this in our meeting with them yesterday, we can be a little ethnocentric as far as what's happening in America is so important, instead of having the opportunity to talk to them about how is all of this playing out where they live.
Yeah, and similar stories. I got a chance to talk to each and every one of them in some limited fashion, either before or after. And it's like they're all living the same story. We're all trying to get the message out to sort of cut through the BS to get to the facts. That was a common topic. But I, like us, they have curiosity. And they were curious about how we got to be doing what we were doing and how we approach our show and what we think about the current political climate. And I love the questions they're asking. I would have liked to have more time with them, but I said at the end, it was one of the best hour and a half, 2 hours I've spent in a long time because it was such an honest conversation and they all had these different perspectives. And I love the fact that they were all like touting their own countries.
Oh yeah. They were all vying for which African country is the one that Steve should visit first.
Yeah. So they're all making the case, which if you're not going to be proud about where you're from, I mean, what else are you going to be, happy about or proud about? So it was such a great opportunity, and why I especially appreciated it. It's not a common thing to be able to do that.
No.
To be able to talk to people from other countries all assembled in one room. And we had, like you said, 15 to 20 different people of different backgrounds and different ages and different occupations, all sort of talking and communicating together. We had two translators because there was a French speaking person.
Well, a lot of African countries are French French speaking countries colonialism.
Yeah, I was going to say that, because of that stuff.
It was a very cool opportunity. It is a reminder of any chance you can to expand your horizons and get perspective from people outside of your, what you've experienced is a good opportunity.
Which reminds me of a text I got yesterday. I'm too lazy to go look it up, but they basically chastised me for traveling so much. And the reason I travel is because I want those experiences. I want to see and listen to people who don't necessarily come from here. And I think one of the biggest problems we have in this country, and you can be offended if you want to,
is people that basically sit in the same place their entire life and don't listen, don't experience other things beyond their little neighborhood. I think that's actually dangerous. And that may hurt your feelings. I don't care.
Now I'm thinking about how to respond to that.
Think about it.
I don't think it's dangerous.
I think it's dangerous because it limits your world vision.
I think it's unfortunate for those people. I think there is a lot that can be gained from, even if you love where you're from, right? Like, I love Wisconsin, but I left for a long time. And I think there was a lot to be learned by being able to meet different kinds of people, experience different things, and then always come back. And so I do think whether it's travel, whether it's getting out of your routine, but opening yourself up to new experiences and new people is always a good thing. I don't know if it's dangerous.
Change is a good
thing. Because some things, you know, like getting a passport is not always affordable. Traveling internationally is not always affordable.
Here's the great thing about the digital world we live in now. You can travel the world and never leave So if you can't do the other thing, do that thing. Pretty simple. Pretty sure you got an internet connection because you're hate tweeting all the time on every damn subject you're not even qualified to talk about. That, yeah, I said that too. All right. Enough of that stuff. You can tell it's my last day for a while because I'm just getting... That's why I blew up the first hour because I just would not
stop. Get a little punchy.
Little punchy. Although I'm fully packed, so let's celebrate that. All right. After the break, Mr. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com will join us. Lots of things to talk about in the city of Milwaukee, in the great state of Wisconsin, in the greatest country on the planet, United States of America. Should we have a patriotic theme going to break? Never mind.
Jeremy Janine, it is Thursday, so you are here to give us the updates of Milwaukee. Where should we start first?
Let's start where it's stinkiest, at the drop-off center.
Okay.
There are two drop-off centers in Milwaukee, and they got in the news a lot in August because of everyone having to go there because of the flood. Well, the question has been in City Hall for several years now, should there be a third drop-off center? And there seems to be a desire. Yes, Department of Public Works, DPW would like one. Common Council would like one, but no one really wants the drop-off center in their backyard. Mm. It might be the ultimate not in my backyard thing.
Which is actually a little bit more understandable than some of the other NIMBYisms that pop up as far as like, well, it'll be fine. But this, I have to agree, I don't necessarily want to live next to a drop-off site.
Right. And so the hope from Department of Public Works, you look at, there's one kind of by Direct Supply. It's on North Industrial Road, way far north in the city, by Mill Road. And then the other one's on Lincoln Avenue, kind of by the city's western border with West Milwaukee, 39th and Lincoln. So the push by DPW is to have one kind of in the middle of the city, east of those two. So think like 35th and Capitol. Well, the city happens to own land at 35th and Capitol, Century City, the former A.O. Smith Tower Automotive. But the Department of City Development doesn't want to see essentially a dump go there because they want industrial tenants to come in there with lots of jobs.
Yeah.
And so then the question is, well, where do you put it? And no one has an answer. There's now another study on what it would cost. And for something that looks just like a sea of asphalt and a bunch of dumpsters, it would actually cost $11 million to build one. And then the Department of Public Works says, well, actually, you want this, in addition to your four-acre dump, you want a four-acre transfer station next to it, which is where all your little garbage trucks get packed into a very large truck to be carted off to an actual landfill. That would push the cost to $20 million. But it would save you $1 million a year in operating it because all these garbage trucks would be driving less around the city. Mm. So there is operational advantages there. But there's no money at the moment, and there's no site, but there's a lot of frustration at City Hall over, we want to get this done, and the Department of Public Works is saying, we'll have more for you later in October.
That Century City site is interesting because it's been, you know, sitting there like for a long time. Has there ever been anything recently that anyone sort of moved the needle on that thing? And
so there's really two success stories there. There's in a former A.O. Smith Tower Automotive building, there's Talgo's rehabbing railroad cars, primarily for California. And going back a decade or so, the vision was they'd build them 15 years now. They'd build new cars for the Midwest there. That didn't happen, but this rehab work is happening there. Then there is a new building called Century City 1 that's closer to 27th and Capitol that has a number of tenants in it. It's owned by the partners who created Good City Brewing, which is now no longer, but their legacy lives on through this business, through this building. Craft Beverage Warehouse is in there, which is a leader in supplying cans to breweries. And then another tenant
is the food?
Yes,
the
100 Acre is there.
Yes. I've interviewed him before.
Which is an interesting business. They're actually looking at expanding to River West, that there is basically an indoor farm there growing small greens for restaurants all across the city.
The NIMBY question is interesting. It's sort of a high level look at this, all of these things, and it happened with Bucky's in Oak Creek. And this is just a
subjective answer, I guess you can make to this question is you think the NIMBY thing is bigger than it used to be? Like the negative reaction to development because you don't want it by you. Is it bigger now?
Well,
you think?
I would also say Buc-ee's, having a Buc-ee's next to you is very different than having a dump next to you. But
it's a lot of traffic. I would actually point to something you guys have been talking about a lot recently, which is social media and its role. Social media rewards the loudest, angriest voices. So these meetings are announced about proposals and the craziest takes get pushed to the top. This has long been a discussion in City Hall. The people that are generally okay with it or have mild concerns, they don't show up at a meeting and complain.
Yeah. Supporters never show up. It's just the people that don't want things.
Or even the people with solvable problems. They don't show up at the meeting. They just email and, hey, I want the driveway to be 50 feet down the road.
Yeah. And this is sort of dismissive to people that complain about that stuff. But if you don't like what's going, then you buy the property and do what you want with it. Or try to do what you want with it.
So that'll be a big question here is where are there 4 acres in the middle of the city that the city could buy? And what might that cost depending on where it is?
But who wants a dump?
Going back to the century, is there other potential for tenants? Is there any interest? Wasn't there at one point like a meatpacking thing that talk about NIMBYism, right? And no one wanted that here? Yeah.
Well,
I was in support of that, by the way.
That died of politics, I think.
Okay.
That the company had gone to pretty great lengths to be like, here's how we're controlling the smell. It's all indoors. Strauss Brands, which then I think canceled their Franklin expansion in the end after a lot of controversy there too. Actually, the current mayor had done a lot of groundwork when he was an alderman, just going to survey. And I had this conversation with him, and I hope I'm not exposing something that was private from years ago, but he was like, I actually went out to Franklin when this was a hot controversy on the Common Council. And I went and like, are there odors from this?
Yeah.
What is the truck volume like? And he's like, I couldn't tell that it was any different than any other business.
Yeah, exactly right.
So there are potential for Century City. That the Century City 1 building I talked about, there's a plan for Century City 2. Just as soon as that seemed to get groundwork or momentum, then interest rates spiked and that deal seemed to taper off.
Reminds me of my time spent in Cudahy, Wisconsin, where I grew up as a young lad in the old Patrick Cudahy, which made the bacon. And it smelled fantastic. And sometimes smells aren't all bad, especially when you're talking about bacon. Anyway. Just a recollection from my past that no one wants or needs. But I felt like I had to share it because it's my last day before I'm on vacation. All right, quick break. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Also the owner and operators of that great tchotchke shop, which is located where, Jeremy?
755 North Milwaukee Street, corner of Milwaukee and Mason.
So I also learned that you share customers or send customers back and forth because the Milwaukee Historical Society's store is close to you guys too, right?
Yeah, so Historic Milwaukee is just to the south, and then the Historical Society is just across the river to the west, and we don't have something, we point the other direction and say they might have it over there.
There you go.
30 seconds or less, how would you describe your store?
All things Milwaukee and Wisconsin gifts packed to the brim in a 500-square-foot space, no tourist leaves unhappy.
Right. Well,
good elevator pitch.
Wow, you've either written that down or performed that before. Well done, sir. All right. Not the sexiest topic in the world, but an important topic, one that maddens me because it should have been addressed years ago, so decades ago. Lead pipe removal in Milwaukee.
So it's happening. That I really only have good news today, which is great to report. That 2017, the city started to get serious about this. They created an ordinance that said if your lead lateral breaks, and what a lead service line or a lead lateral is, it's the pipe that connects the water main in the street to your house or to your business. If that breaks and it's made of lead, and 70-some thousand at that point were, it's got to be replaced with all copper. And if you're in a child care facility, we're going to come replace it for you for free. And you would think that, at least I did in 2017, oh, okay, child care thing, they'll take care of that. Well, no, child care facilities, dealing with how difficult a business that is, they move all the time. New ones open, close. So that's an ongoing thing. Breaks are an ongoing thing. But now, under then-President Joe Biden, a surge of federal funding came with a new requirement that all the lead pipes must be out by 2037. The city had to scale way up from doing almost 1,000 a year to ramping up to now 5,000 or more a year. This year, the goal is 3,500. The Waterworks said yesterday they're on track to meet the goal, but it's going to be a sprint to the finish. And the sprint is really on behalf of the private contractors that do this work. They have to do about 100 a week, which when you think about, they were struggling to do 1,000 a year just 2 or 3 years ago.
It's a lot of work.
They're out there and they're doing it. But there is a systematic strategy to doing this where instead of waiting for breaks or child care facilities, they're now going block by block and just saying, hey, your number's up. We're going to pay for it. We're going to come in and dig up your whole block and we're going to do it.
So how long does it take on average for like a block? Does it take a week? Does it take 2 days.
Judging by the permits and just my anecdotal observation, it takes closer to a week, but okay. Similar to, this is a hot topic of conversation for us, it's one of those things where people show up, they dig all the holes, then maybe nothing happens for the next day, and then they're coming back the next day. And
so it's a very annoying week for the people who live on that block.
Yeah, it's multiple contractors doing different jobs.
It's actually one of the streamlined things. It's all one contractor
doing
now.
All those different jobs in that.
Yep.
Oh, so wow, that's interesting. Who's, do you know the contractor?
Five Star Energy Services is one of them.
And well done.
I forget the other one who actually Joe Biden came to visit their office on the north side.
All right, real quick before the break for news here. This is sort of a fun one. New lighthouse being constructed in Milwaukee. I was not aware of this.
Yeah, so you might be aware of the boathouse, though, in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
On the 3100 block of North Cambridge Avenue by UWM, there's this house that's been there now almost 100 years, if more.
Yeah. Yep.
And it had this lighthouse next to it. And in 1985, the person who bought it tried to fix the lighthouse there. But 20-foot tall structure leaning over this 500-some square foot boathouse. Well, they just stuck a bunch of stucco onto it, which made it really tough to repair 20 years later. So, like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, it just kept tipping and tipping and tipping. So, in 2022, the owners took it down. They're now finally prepared to build a new one. So, Milwaukee, for the first time in many decades, will have a new lighthouse. Just don't expect anyone on the water to be guided by it.
It's not a useful lighthouse. It's just for decoration.
Yeah, it's a $50,000 project. So it's
They just have the money as private citizens?
They rent out this house.
How tall is it?
It's between 20 and 26 feet tall, depending on where you stop measuring.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to be usable in the lake, but I mean...
nor on the nearby Milwaukee River.
Yeah, either. Yeah.
But
it's still cool.
It'll look really nice. It's a father-daughter team doing it. Stephen Tilton and I forget the daughter's
name. Because the boathouse is just a Airbnb, and they make money from renting it out?
Yes. They live nearby. They're basically stewards of their neighborhood in this piece of whimsical architecture.
Can you give out the address again for your store? Because Texter wanted it.
755 North Milwaukee Street. Easiest way to find it. Corner Milwaukee and Mason by Hotel Metro.
And what's the name of it?
Urban Milwaukee, the store.
All right. See what we I listen to the Texters. I see what they ask, and I ask immediately. That's what we do here. Public service. And entertain, and educate, and engage. The three E's. The magic of radio. All right, Jerry and Janine, we're going to continue the conversation after the break. Kristen, you sticking around?
I guess.
All right. I've been rattling her a little bit because
he's not been rattling me. He did yell at me earlier today.
He's rectification.
I almost cut him off, but he needed to finish his thought.
Should HR be involved? Should HR be involved?
Motion of stop. Let me finish.
All right, I had to get it out of me.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen. He is Steve, and we're talking to Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. All right, so what's happening with the Panther Arena and the Miller High Life Theater?
So, and the longtime Milwaukeeans, I'm certain, will have different names. Steve can probably regale us with stories of long ago about them when he had, I don't know.
Milwaukee Auditorium.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. So those two venues are owned by the Wisconsin Center District. Wisconsin Center District also owns Fiserv Forum, but really the Bucks own and control that. But the big thing the Wisconsin Center District has is the $456 million expansion of the Baird Center.
Which is beautiful.
It seems very functional, completed last year now. And it's there and it works. And now the CEO, Marty Brooks, identified that they don't really have a master plan for the rest of their assets. So across the street, they own Panther Arena, the old Milwaukee Arena, Mecca, U.S. Cellular Arena, depending on your age and why you went there at some point. And then the Stephen and Milwaukee Auditorium next to it, which is now the Miller High Life Theater through a relatively new naming rights deal. But that building was redeveloped in 2003, but it's really a 100-plus-year-old building. What are the future of those buildings? There's now a consultant hired to do a study of kind of what are the maintenance needs. And there's one argument that, okay, Wisconsin Center District is just setting the stage to justify putting a big convention hotel and demolishing those buildings.
Hmm.
The other argument is, no, we simply need to know, like, what is the future of these buildings from a planning standpoint? And so that kind of became a whole news cycle on its own last week. The Wisconsin Center District met Friday. They were briefed that for terms of convention hotel, that's something we'd like. And the reason they'd like that is all these groups come to Milwaukee and they have to put 200 people here, 400 people there, 200 here. This would be able 600 or 800 in one building. So makes the city more marketable. But they're studying more than just those, the Panther Arena and the High Life Theater site for where to put that convention hotel. Because there's a fair amount
of
land.
Where else could they put it?
Immediately west of the convention center on 6th Street, there's at least two different open lots. Right. South of the convention center across Wisconsin Avenue, just out the door here, I'll point, there is the 25,000-square-foot city-owned lot that could host a building of that size. But this building is on Wisconsin Center District owned land. Those two buildings are. So I can see why they might think this might be desirable.
So is there any, so the different sporting team that's play in Panther Arena. So the Admirals, the Wave, are they just tenants of the building? And so it's on, if say it's demolished, it's just on those sports teams to find another place to play?
Yes, and that's the real rub. Right now, what the Wisconsin Center District is doing is timing all their leases and the naming rights agreement to all expire at the same time, which, you're like, your cackles might go up and be like, oh, what's really happening here? Yeah. Same time, strategically, that might just make sense. The Wave are relative, or not the Wave, the Admirals are a relatively recent tenant, because they were at the Bradley Center, which supported ice year-round. Mm-hmm. Pfizer Forum was intentionally built not to support ice year-round.
Right.
It allowed them to configure the seating bowl a little differently. It's actually safer on the court. People, as a former Bucks season ticket holder, I'd watch players slip on the basketball court because the ice was underneath it. So they can't go to Pfizer Forum. There's really no logical venue for the Admirals to go to. UWM, the other primary tenant, could go back on its campus. That's a lot smaller. They're essentially going back to a gym.
I remember that was like, was when my brother walked on for UWM, we'd come down and see the games, and it was like just bleachers that get pushed back into the back of the gym and stuff before they were playing at Panther.
It's basically the world's nicest, largest high school gymnasium, at least by Wisconsin standards. So they don't really have a great option, but they have an option. The Wave, again, unclear where they could go. So that would be a multi-million dollar question for all those organizations.
You can't combine, let's say, a little bit smaller theater with a high-rise hotel?
I don't know in its current form if you could combine it. I think with an entirely new building you could.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, yeah. I mean, on that space. Yeah.
I don't know that there's an appetite to do that because I don't know what the economics are of...
Well, the High Life Theater's busy, isn't it? I've been to events there a lot in the last
I've never been in there.
So
really?
The one thing to put in your mind about the High Life Theater is now that FPC Live is opening this new venue next to Pfizer Forum, that's going to take a little bit of business away from that.
All right. Love this from a texter, the way all this information flows effortlessly from Jeremy is incredible. Is there anyone who knows more about Milwaukee? Doubtful.
Well, I'll give John Gerda some credit about Milwaukee history.
Don't get me started on John Gerda. All right. 11:41, 620 WTMJ. The clock's ticking. Quick break. .44, 620 WTMJ, point taken as we spend some time with some jazz music here on the radio. Kristen Bry alongside jazz producing, as always, doing a great job. Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com in studio as he is every Thursday. All right, the big budget, Milwaukee County budget, David Crowley, county executive. Let's focus on a couple of areas. I know you have some things you want to talk about.
Yeah, so there's a lot to this budget, and the big thing is the county is, once... similar to the city, again, finds itself in a hard place because Act 12 helped, but it didn't solve all the problems. The county enters 2026 with a $46 million structural deficit. And what that means essentially is if they provided all the services that they did this year, again, next year, it would cost $46 million more than the revenue they anticipate bringing in. So they're going to solve that in a lot of different ways. They being David Crowley's budget proposal now goes to the county board. A 4.1% property tax increase, $12.3 million that would bring in. They're budgeting that the sales tax revenue will grow. The county had problems with that in the past with their sales tax revenue estimate being inaccurate, but they think they're there. There's more money going to, and their service cuts are a lot of how they're balancing it, but there's $3 million increase going to the sheriff's office to cover overtime. That's been a constant pain for, I guess, the county because the way law enforcement works in Wisconsin is the people in charge of law enforcement basically have to spend the money and then they just send a bill to their local legislator or executive. Right. So that every year lately, the sheriff's been needing this money to secure the courthouse, to secure the jail, and then, or in the community reintegration center, the former House of Corrections. And they haven't had the money, so they've had to go to the county board with an emergency draw. So they're trying to bulk that up in the front. Parks is actually a bright spot, and I'm going through Graham Kilmer's coverage, who really broke this down really well for us in Urban Milwaukee, that revenue from golfs and beer gardens continues to go up, which sustains more improvements to parks that would otherwise just not happen. Now, the really dark spot in the budget is the fiscal cliff that MCTS, Milwaukee County Transit System, is facing. It's a $14 million deficit they have next year. They've been in the news a lot because of the almost $11 million deficit. Mm-hmm. That the surprise they had this year. We've talked a lot about the fare evasion. And again, the scale of that problem, at least from a budget perspective, is like $6 million. So even if Steve got all the scoff laws to start paying for the bus, you still have a structural deficit caused by increasing costs to provide that service and declining state aid. So there are six routes next year that would get cut. Route 20, 28, 33, 34, 55, 58. You want to look on a map on where those are. Some of those routes are kind of diagonal across the county. But that's a Villard Avenue route on the north to a Layton Avenue east-west route on the south. Route 33 kind of snakes through the middle of the city, ending at the state fairgrounds. So those cuts alone won't make the system not function, but they do make it a lot less usable.
Yeah, and for folks who don't know, Layton Avenue, that's the northern border of the airport.
Yes.
I see those stops, and I travel that route a lot. Those are needed routes, so I mean that's why it's critical that this stuff gets figured out.
Is there pushback as far as what this proposal is?
We did get a comment. So Crowley released his budget, said there'd be cuts to MCTS. Then MCTS identified the specific cuts. Then, this is a recurring problem that happened this summer, county board goes, wait, we weren't briefed on the cuts being that big. Now, $14 million, that's closing in on 10% of their budget, so that's going to be big. From a number standpoint, how many riders are impacted? This would immediately eliminate 5% of the system's total ridership, which we really run the risk in Milwaukee of entering a death spiral for transit, where you have a smaller system, so you have fewer riders.
Yeah.
So then you cut it again the next year, smaller mm-hmm. system, fewer riders, declining revenue. It's a problem you can't get out of easily.
That's always been a tough one to problem solve on. All right, real quick before we go to break, any updates on Water Street Violence?
Yes, the police department has followed through. They're moving to close Element Lounge, a nightclub just south of Wisconsin Avenue on Water Street. We talked about through the end of July, there were 12 violent incidents on Water Street. I think they're all shootings. Three of those were directly tied to Element. The police department has taken the unusual step of filing for what's known in state law as a revocation. The Common Council will now hold a special hearing to consider revoking the bar's license before it's even up for renewal.
Jeremy Janine, UrbanWalkie.com. One more segment to go. News at the top of the hour, as always. Chris and Steve, point taken, 620 WTMJ. Having some fun on radio, Jerry Mangini, Kristen Boss, yours truly on Point Take on 620 WTMJ. All right, let's wrap it up with some stories about, I say Kosciuszko, you say Kosciuszko?
Kosciuszko. And my Polish friends with Polish ancestry corrected me that, well, I can tell you're the Anglophile in the group. Yeah. That,
well, so, I pretend.
thinking about 10th and Lincoln right by the, I can't think of the cathedral there. It's not a cathedral, though. Anyways, right there, 10th and Lincoln, large county park. It has a large community center, 58,000 square feet. The community it's well used. This has been an issue kind of brewing for a couple of years now. There's now an estimate of what it will cost to rehab this building. I believe it's a late 60s, early 70s era building, similar to many buildings in the county's inventory, that making this building kind of function in the future. There's lots of deferred maintenance, roof, mechanicals, all of that. That expanding it, making it functional for future uses is a $32 million price tag for the county. That David Crowley has proposed to allocate almost $2 million to planning this, but then that $32 million price tag needs to come before the county board in a future budget. And does the county want to take on debt to pay for rehabbing that? Or is it going to go somewhere else because of budget constraints?
Yeah, not the same story, but I think the Kelly, Lawrence Kelly Center is moving from Cudahy to South Milwaukee because they had to consolidate some cost.
Yes, the Kelly Senior Center, I forget the exact specifics, but I believe there was a public-private partnership there that was a good opportunity.
And
Graham and I have been talking, Graham Kilmer, our county reporter, have been talking a lot about the difference between the city and the county. When I cover the city budget, there's a lot of like, okay, the library is getting a new roof here. The county budget, it's kind of all or nothing. So they end up with these projects with huge price tags.
Is there a reason for that?
That's what we're trying to put a pin on. And we came to the conclusion that they're just that much more cash strapped at the county, that all the small kind of good maintenance things, they're just kind of passing by.
So I say this as someone who loves parks, and I love how many parks Milwaukee has, and we have some incredible parks. Is there also ever conversations around selling some of the property? Because they have so much property. Is there ever conversation as far as like some of them just, I mean, I think about Cathedral Square in Milwaukee, which is a county park that just one little block radius. It feels like it should be a city park.
Yeah, so that is definitely a conversation, especially looking more at the suburbs, where the southwest side suburbs, Greenfield, Hales Corners, I know there's much stronger partnerships there of, hey, we want amenities in this park. We know they're not a big priority for you, so we're going to take them on. That allows the county to focus on lower income areas, which is what Kosciuszko Park is. We can kind of pivot to actually to another park that's in that same circumstance, Cole Park, on the very far northwest side of the city. If you go to Northridge Mall, just keep going northwest there on County Line Road, and then it's got to be about 80th Street. There's a gap in the Oak Leaf Trail there that's a completely undeveloped park. It's basically just a green space with trees. There will now be a two-mile trail getting built through it, which will fill a gap in the Oak Leaf Trail network.
That's always popular, too, because we have some of that through our neck of the woods on the south side of the county, and super popular with walkers and you know bike riders and all that stuff. So that's good stuff. St. Joseph's Basilica.
There's the word.
Have you ever been there?
No, not yet.
Absolutely amazing.
Wonderful building.
Yeah, I've heard it's gorgeous.
Is that the former post office building in Chicago? Is that the story?
That is correct. They disassembled it and brought it up here
and put it back together. And I've been in there in the last couple years.
It was a post office?
Yes.
The same materials, different building layout.
But it's absolutely spectacular. I mean, it looks cool on the outside, but you get inside, it has this marble look. It blows you away, so. That's when the government just spent whatever they wanted to on government buildings. Hey, why not use expensive marble and stone for a government
building? Well, that's how I finally got to do the City Hall tour.
Yeah.
And just that building makes no sense. It's like built on a swamp. It's just like hundreds of piles underneath. It's sinking. It was the tallest building. It was like all these things that they decided to like, oh, no, we need to do this. And I was like, the terrible idea.
Yeah. Before I let you go, a lot of people are asking about how they subscribe and all that stuff. Easiest way?
UrbanMilwaukee.com. At the very top of the site, hit member sign up, and that you'll be all plugged in.
All right, you got 20 seconds. Anything you're covering in the week ahead?
I didn't get to it yet because it's a complicated story, but the city is trying to wrap its arm around habitual parking offenders and how not to just surprise tow their car, but to get them to comply. Tens of millions of dollars of unpaid parking tickets.
All this unpaid stuff, evading fares on the buses, not paying your parking tickets. Get on it, people!
Do the right thing!
Do the right thing. All right, I'm out of here for 2 weeks. Kristen will take care of business. This has been Point Taken. Thank you, Jeremy. News is next on 620 WTMJ.